Welcome to Alchemist X Innovators Inside, the podcast where we explore the world of corporate innovation and dive deep into the minds of thought leaders, high achievers, and risk takers. I'm your host, Ian Bergman, and together we'll uncover the challenges, triumphs, and secrets behind successful innovation journeys. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur, an industry veteran, or simply curious about the ever-evolving landscape of innovative ideas and what it takes to put them into practice, this is the podcast for you. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and let's embark on this exciting journey together.
Matthew, this is the first, I believe, ever Alchemist Innovators Inside where we're in the same room.
Well, I'm nothing if not just trying to break things.
Matthew, first, welcome to the pod.
Thank
you. I'm
really
excited that you're here. Thank you. And here's the fun thing for our listeners. This is take number two, because we're actually not entirely sure what happened, but most likely your highly competent host pressed the wrong button after we recorded the last one and made it go poof.
Ian, do you need to check any buttons right now?
You know what? I did. I'm looking. If people hear background noise, I'm glancing at the screen. I'm like, okay, it says it's recording. We've been talking for 6 minutes. I see a stream of audio. I feel like I've done so much diligence that when I inevitably mess this up, I get to blame technology this time.
I do notice that there's not a plug plugged into the wall. Do you have enough battery power?
My Razer laptop, which gets 6 minutes of battery power. No, it will be okay.
Super.
But hey, well, one, thanks for coming back. But two, you know, Matthew, thanks for coming on the podcast. I think, you know, as you know, this conversation, Alchemist Innovators Inside, it's just conversations with people that are at that cutting edge of innovation, right? And really specifically that kind of intersection of entrepreneurship, the new capabilities of technology, and helping people stay competitive and current in the world. And that feels like it's getting harder and harder every day.
It is. And it's funny because as you describe that, I was reminded of how everything changes, but everything also stays the same. And no matter what the innovation is, whether it's AI or the wheel at one point, yep, it's the same struggles and the same challenges that we have. And that, to me, actually brings a lot of comfort and solace. And the solace is underscored by the fact that there are some tools out there that we have inside of us that we can use as a part of that process. And one thing I would encourage all of your listeners to do is, no matter how bad a day you're having or how hard a challenge you're trying to solve, take that gap between stimulus and response, have a breath, and look inside yourself and see the fact that you have an incredibly powerful tool that you can use to help you get through the challenge and then communicate that challenge. And that is storytelling, unsurprisingly.
Well, that's amazing. So let's talk about that. I'd love to get, you know, a little bit of your background, the kind of the 2 or 3 minutes and what you do that's brought you, you know, to sort of get cued off of a discussion of innovation and say, yeah, and storytelling. So tell us a little bit about Matthew.
The quickest and easiest way is, you've only given me a couple of minutes to do that, is I screw up a lot. So I screw up a lot. My memory has actually been improved by keeping a diary, a daily journal, every single day, handwritten. I've been doing that, started in the mid to late 80s, and then in 1990, started doing that every day.
Wow.
Which has helped with my memory. But in general, I struggle a lot. I have ADHD. I have dyslexia. So I'm what the latest sort of buzz terminology is, neurodivergent or neurodiverse. And that's actually quite a relief. It's quite a kind of gives me permission to accept the fact that, yeah, I do struggle with this stuff. I do have problems when it comes to what we as a society rely on, right? Reading, sure, and writing and these types of things that make it such a challenge for all the people out there who are on the spectrum with this stuff. And as a result of making a lot of mistakes, I got in a lot of trouble And the hilarious thing is I've got a 14-year-old right now. And so on my desk in my office is my 1991 diary. Because in 1991, I was 14. And so I'm able to dip into that and get some empathy for my eldest son, but also to be reminded of, you know, all the trouble I got into.
all the fun and the stories.
All the fun. Well, and the stories that come out of that are one thing. But what I found is that I had to tell a lot of stories to survive. Like if you're in trouble, if you're sitting there across the table from the headmaster, and this isn't Vashon Island 2024, this is Britain 1991, across the desk from the headmaster being told off for, you know, to use a nice soft term, you have to think fast on your feet and you have to come up with some stories. And so for me, that was really the inception of having to develop this craft of storytelling. Had no idea what I was doing at the time and didn't know how it was going to pay off, but that's how it all began.
That's amazing. And so you have taken this obsession with storytelling and this recognition of the craft, and you've made that something of a life's mission, working with a lot of folks in technology. Tell us just kind of 60 seconds about what you do now.
I love helping people figure stuff out. And if we weren't on a podcast, I'd use another S word, but maybe a bit fruitier. I love helping people figure stuff out. I've had to spend so much time figuring myself out. One of the reasons I've developed all the frameworks that I've developed is so that I can apply repeatedly with a process business storytelling.
Yeah.
Not Hollywood, not the hero's journey, not trying to help you make a movie, not trying to help you write a book, but use storytelling. Tap into this fundamental thing we all have inside of us. And I love helping people figure stuff out. And I love technology. I'm a massive geek at heart. It's why I had so much equipment, you know, that we could tap into today for this. And because I'm such a massive geek and I love what's happening with technology at any point, I grew up, my father was at Intel from 1978 until the year he retired and then died. And I am a massive geek, and I didn't have the math skills to go into actually being an engineer or physicist is actually what I wanted to be, which my children, I was telling them about, and they couldn't believe it. What do you mean? Physics? Physics? You want to do physics?
You're a word person. Yeah. What?
So I found my solace in words, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I love helping people figure stuff out. And just like we started off this conversation, we're talking about the latest and the greatest and the bleeding edge and the challenges with developing and building partnerships and getting people's attention, getting people on board, let alone selling the damn stuff, right? Yeah. And I love helping with that. And that's what I spend my days doing.
Well, that's really interesting. I mean, so one of these kind of like narratives that's been going around in my head constantly, and I think is really important, although I can't say I'm the most articulate about it, but you know, there's this idea that the pace of change in technology is not just rapid, but it's ever increasing. And for some of us in the tech industry, that's very exciting, if a little kind of nerve-wracking. For others, it can be terrifying, but it is kind of an absolute truth, right? Stuff is changing faster and faster and faster. And in fact, we're getting to a place where it feels like technology is changing around us so quickly, we don't have time to think about it, much less kind of take a beat and discuss, communicate. You know, you said sell, and selling is important, but also just conversing. You know, through your lens as a storyteller, how do you think about helping people work through communicating messages when the world around them is just changing so quickly?
That is the holy grail in so many ways. As a professional, you, me, anybody who's listening to this is so completely slammed every single day, let alone our personal lives, right? I often find myself thinking, like, how on earth does anybody find the time to get anything done, right? Whether it's, you know, work or cleaning up the garage, which we actually managed to do a couple weeks ago, amazingly.
Oh, congrats.
Wow. The new car forced that function because it was bigger. So if you're able to think about that idea of stimulus and response, and there's a quote that's misattributed to Viktor Frankl on this, and unsurprisingly based on his work, is try and increase that gap. Try and give yourself the time to pause. I meditate every day and have done for several years now. started just before COVID, and it helped me get through COVID. And most days I do it with at least one of my kids. And meditation, mindfulness, the ability to just push away from the desk for a few minutes, you know, mm-hmm. go for the walk in Palo Alto, like you were saying, or wherever you happen to be. And in that time, of course, first of all, just give yourself the space. But before you get back into trying to solve whatever problem you're trying to solve, recognize that the problem you're trying to solve is a part of your story. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful, because no matter how big the challenge that we're faced with is, ultimately, as long as we make it through, and 9 times out of 10, we do make it through, on the other side of that, we have a story to tell. And the bigger the challenge, the bigger the struggle, the better the story. And it's only through the binary positive negative aspect of experience are we gifted the ability to use that as a way to create positivity. Think about somebody that you know that just, or have come across at some point, that brags a lot.
Sure.
Right.
So we all know one.
A braggart, somebody who just talks about themselves, never asks any questions. And that's this kind of attempt at constant positive. And it's actually really, really dull and really boring. Right. We've all been there. It's like, oh my God, will you just stop talking?
There's no tension. There's frustration at the story, but there's no tension. Yeah. There's no up down.
Okay. It becomes a story to tell about it because of the frustration you're experiencing in that moment. But yeah, so I would encourage folks to take a beat. Whatever's getting your heckles up, that stimulus, give yourself a gap to the response. And before you get back into it, just give yourself permission to recognize that this is something that is a part of your story and one day will be a story to tell. But right now, Ian, you're making it.
I love this. So you talk about taking a beat. For, you know, a lot of our audience are people who are deep in tech. Now, they might be deep in a startup building something, or they might be deep in a corporation thinking about how do I embrace and use technology for innovation and competitiveness purposes. Why is kind of taking that pause and thinking through the story so important for them to just get their job done?
It's actually brain science. So. Okay. I know enough about enough subjects to be very dangerous in a lot of subjects, you know, a mile wide and an inch deep. In fact, I always answer the question, are you a specialist or a generalist, with generalist? And I'm absolutely flabbergasted that here I am over a decade into focusing on one thing, storytelling. But my goodness, it's a topic that opens up all sorts of different technologies, conversation, stories. So luckily there's enough diversity for me. But in terms of how the brain works, it's exactly the same reason that you need sleep.
Okay.
You know, when we sleep, our bodies recuperate, right? They physically recuperate. There's actually some new brain science about what's really going on in the brain, and it's actually more active than we thought. But when you're taking in data, when you're working on data and your brain is doing that processing, you know, input processing, trying to do output, it doesn't have a chance to, and now this is where you can tell that I'm actually not a brain scientist because I'm using the word marinade.
That's what happens, right? There's fluids, but yeah, it doesn't have a chance.
And there's so much going on in the brain. There's not only do we have our consciousness, which contains things like our ego and our ideas, and we then have our subconsciousness. All of that is taking place in our cortex. But then we have inside, deeper into the brain, we have the mammalian brain. And then even deeper in that, we have the reptilian brain.
Sure.
In fact, I'm reading a book right now called The Body Knows the Score. It's a book about trauma, which for me personally, my own personal journey, is very important. I lost my parents in a car crash in 2015. And obviously a huge amount of grief that went through, and it becomes a part of who you are. But it also became the tipping point for me to leave Microsoft and to do something with my life that I could sink my teeth into. Yeah. Real passion for it. And your brain is doing so much all of the time. Like our limbic brain right now is doing things that we aren't even subconscious about, let alone conscious about. And so that pause, giving yourself that break, right? And it doesn't have to be taking a day off, right? It can be going for a walk. It can be watching your favorite TV show. It's okay to play Xbox for mm-hmm. half an hour to just switch off.
Better
right?
believe it.
Yeah, or you'll raise a laptop, right? And so in doing that, you give your brain a chance to find those connections that it can't find when you're looking at them. It's kind of like trying to look at your blind spot, right? You just can't see it, right? Keep looking for it. It's just not there. So taking that break, taking that beat, gives you that opportunity to process and to let some magic happen before we even start thinking about what kind of stories are making out of that.
Yeah. Well, I love that, right? Because there's, when you're kind of flip around to innovation, right? When I think about what is innovation, ultimately it ends up being a behavioral change for someone. Like successful innovation means someone's going to make some different choices because something is better, right? That's kind of the outcome. To get there, you need to take action, right? So many great ideas stall like on the altar of like too much thinking and pontification, not actually taking action. But you also have to be deliberate about, you know, I'd say stepping away from the busy, stepping away from the day to day and thinking through, it's not even just what am I trying to accomplish here? It's actually almost disconnecting from active thinking, giving your brain a rest, right? And then out of that comes, I think, a lot of possibility. Comes the, like, call it the art of the possible, but out of that comes what might be in the world, right? And I think that's the same underpinning of, like, that can drive action. It can drive narrative, which is a form of action. And I think there's something interesting here.
There is. And you're a father of two young children.
Oh, yes, I am. That's why the shadow's under my eyes.
And I'm a few years ahead of you, but have still, they're 14 and 11. How's your four-year-old daughter? Well, how does she spend her time?
Playing. Engaging. Yeah.
Just imagining about.
Imagining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like you said, there is such a close relationship between play and innovation. Like whether you're making a pillow fort.
Yeah.
Or you're pretending to be a doctor or a vet or a pilot or an engineer or a fireman, whatever you're choosing, you're playing. And if we don't play, we're disenfranchising our ability to innovate.
Okay. I love this. This rings so very true. Now, that said, it feels so hard to bring play into our lives, right? Whether we're engineers, executives, innovators, marketers, whatever we might be, it feels hard. How do we bring in that concept of play, of freedom to explore? Do you have any tips or tricks on kind of just how to bring that into our day-to-day lives as individuals or teams?
Well, first of all, I'd like to just scare everybody who's listening.
Do it.
And that is to say, we don't stop playing because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing.
So true. No.
And you are literally killing yourself if you don't play. And play can be playing in your brain. It can be playing with your kids. It can be playing a sport, playing the Xbox, the PlayStation, whatever it happens to be. It's the free form imagination, just going out there and pressing some random buttons. And that's actually a reference to a wonderful discovery that I made on Saturday. And in fact, it wasn't really my discovery. I figured out what it was after the fact. My youngest had a sleepover on Saturday. One of his best buddy came over and stayed. And his best buddy was getting a drink, getting some water, and wanted some ice. Went up to the fridge to go get the ice. And he wanted crushed cube. He didn't want cubes. He wanted it crushed.
Sure.
This kid clearly knew what he wanted, right? Because I just go for whatever's there. Like, yeah, you know.
But he was after crushed.
He wanted crushed.
He knew the melt rate, the chilling rate that he needed.
And he was standing there staring right at where it said, you know, I have to look down on that button, but he's looking right at it. And he presses it, and I'm actually standing right next to him, absent-mindedly helping the kids out with stuff. And I just was taking a beat, in fact, and just being mindful, just having a waiting for him to do what he was doing, because I needed to get the kids something out of the fridge. There's a little moment I can just pause. And the fridge made a strange sound. And not only did it make a strange sound, I noticed that there was a brand new illuminated icon on our fridge.
So not just like the grinding of crushing the ice.
There was something else.
There was something else.
Something else. And I said, something just happened that I'm not familiar with. Can you show me what you did? Thought I knew what he was doing, and he showed me what he did. There's only like 5 buttons on this, and it's like press and hold to reset the filter. Press and, you know. And I wondered, what is this crushed cubed ice plus thing? So this, he's pressed and held, and he's triggered this ice plus mode, which I didn't even know existed. I mean, okay. I don't do much with my fridge. It's just kind of there.
You get cold, you get white water, you get ice.
Now, the biggest complaint I've had with this fridge is it's got a really small ice compartment, because the ice compartment is in the door. It's one of these double door ones, and it's got the freezer compartment.
I see where this is going. Below. I'm in suspense here.
You're in suspense. It's really cool. I promise. It's really cool.
I'm quivering.
So it's really cool, because it turns out, pop open, you know, do a quick search, LG refrigerator ice plus mode. What is it? Turns out that for those times when you've got friends around and your piddly little ice tray in the fridge, which isn't really very big and has caused us frustration on multiple occasions and has sent me up to 7-Eleven to go get big bags of ice when we've had friends over, Ice Plus super cools the ice compartment and accelerates ice production.
Yeah.
So I did a little video and I sent it to his parents, who were some of our best friends. And his mum's first response was, I'm so sorry, did he screw something up? I'm like, no, watch the video. I love it. He's just discovered a party mode for our fridge. And these are friends that we spent the past 7 years doing New Year's with. So we partied with them a little bit and run out of ice with them. So I'm like, when can we have you guys over so we can make the most of your son's discovery?
And he discovered it by experimenting, just doing. He's just like, there's a button, let's press it.
He was chilling out, no pun intended. Yeah. Pressed the button for a bit too. He was happily just filling his ice, got his water. He's off in the clouds. He's quite a creative kid as well. I identify with him in many ways. We both, I think, have similar kind of things going on. And yeah, he pressed and held that button for a bit long. He went out there and he pressed some buttons, and the world reacted. What was it Jobs said about poking the world?
I don't know, but I want to know that quote.
There's a quote, something like, if you poke the world, it'll poke you back, or something like that. But his point was like, but go out there and poke the world and see what happens.
I love that. We'll look up the quote, but I absolutely love that. And it's really interesting. Like, that is innovation. That is change. And so I feel like we're in a world where, well, this is going to sound awkward. We're going to keep this PG. There's a lot we can poke in this world right now. There's a lot of new stuff coming out. You were telling me about some of them. You want to share your secrets for your LinkedIn flow these days?
Yeah, so I'm a certified coach for the Y Institute. And I fell in love with the Y Institute when I was introduced to it, because I spend all my time thinking about why, because stories are about why.
Yeah.
And beautifully, of course, for our conversation, there's a connection there to innovation, right? With why. Why this? Why, you know, why? What's possible? And why do we want this? So I'm a coach, and we have these monthly coach calls. And in fact, I'm missing one right now. So to have this conversation,
I'm gonna apologize to the coaches.
No, it's me. It's a benefit for me as a coach. We all get together and we learn things. And so a couple months ago, I was on one of the calls, and there was this fellow Y coach, and I'd not met him before. I think he's a Y coach, but he joined. He's friends with the CEO of the Y Institute, and he has for the longest time been running a consultancy where he advises on LinkedIn strategy, right? We've all come across the folks who sell those services.
Yeah, create your content farm, get your followers, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And some of them are really good, right? And those ones who are really good will actually coach you and help you. Yep. And so he's taken many people through this process. And he looked at all this AI stuff that was happening and looked at all the advice he was giving his clients about interacting and commenting on posts and all this good stuff. And he's created a tool called EVAI, and it is a Chrome plugin that helps you with your LinkedIn content. It helps you do your posts, comment on posts, anything you'll be doing on LinkedIn helps you with your title or your whatever, you know, your profile. It makes recommendations on that. For me, what I use every single day is I use the comment feature, because as I have ADHD and dyslexia, I agonize over my communication, ironically, right? As a communicator and a storyteller. And I'm always worried. I get that from my mum. I always worry about, like, I'm quite an antagonist. I like challenging the status quo. And I worry that my comments might come across as a little bit antagonistic rather than trying to stimulate the conversation that I'm trying to stimulate. And funnily enough, the more I've used this tool, the more I've become aware of the delta between what I thought I wanted to say and what would be maybe a way of saying it that, especially in America, wouldn't upset people. And this tool helps me with that. So it looks at, if I'm going to respond to Ian, and I've done it to your posts.
So you've AI replied my posts.
I have.
It sounds like you.
And sometimes I have to tune it. I normally have to do a little bit of sprinkles, right? A little bit of the seasoning. Sometimes I have to make complete changes. Sometimes it just doesn't work and I have to go to ChatGPT to get, you know.
Sure.
And sometimes I just write it myself, but
sometimes you have to fall back on actually, you know, doing it
just
yourself.
Just going to do the comment. But most of the time, call it 80% of the time, it gives me a recommendation. I make a few tweaks and it's good to go.
Yeah.
And especially when I couple drop downs, by the way, create a profile in the app when you subscribe to it. Make sure you tell it about yourself, the words you use, your style, all this kind of stuff.
Sure, it's like training a GPT or anything like that.
It literally is.
Context.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, you know, this is a productivity enhancer. Like, we talk so much about tech. There's a lot of narrative around, you know, what jobs will AI replace and how does it change the value equation of creators and producers? And like, that's real conversation. But the flip side of that is this productivity enhancement, right? That lets you sort of tune your engagement with the social ecosystem. I think that's really cool.
And the biggest impact for me, well, there's been two. The first one is I'm able to do a lot more interaction. And the second is that then has a positive impact on people looking at my profile, the conversations I'm having, people going to our website, you know, the lead gen tools that we have on the website that then result in that. But for me, it's really about accelerating that experience. The problem I've always had with email, text messages, social media is how I come across in those mediums. I tend to come across a lot better in person. And I can even throw a few grenades into the conversation and then I can be like, you know, that was intentional. Let's talk about this, right? Yeah. And that was a glass. There's a funny joke about glass houses and I'll have to tell you, maybe we'll do it in this conversation. But a glass ceiling I had in corporate America was created by that. And so I honestly see it as a tool that helps me with my disability. I have a disability and it feels weird to say that as somebody by any measure is in a very, you know, what would be, you know, common terminology, say privileged, you know, position. But disability is really answering the question, are you expected to be able to operate in a certain way in society, to be able to function effectively in society? The metaphor there is, why do we have disabled parking spots outside shops? It's because you can't park on the other side of the car park,
right?
And do that have the same experience if you're, I'd say, in a wheelchair or some other physical.
It's a tool that closes the gap.
Closes the gap.
Yeah.
And so for me, AI has just blown the lid off that from an electronic communications perspective.
Well, I think from a innovation perspective, I think it's just such a great example of a use case that's very personal and sort of how you applied it. Now, I do have to ask you, I mean, we're coming up on our time here, but we'll see, this may get us down a rabbit hole. there's maybe a flip side to this, right? Like you're using this to increase the quality, the quantity of your engagement, you know, builds your profile, which is important. And it also, frankly, makes people feel good when you're commenting and interacting with their stuff. So there's a lot of positive. What's the end state here, though? Like, we talk about tech changing constantly. This wouldn't have been possible 2 years ago. It's really not very good a year ago. 2 years from now, are we just going to be in a world where the AI is actually doing it for you and we just have AIs talking to each other and that is everything that we see in the discussion sphere? Like, how do we keep a human element in this?
You've asked several holy grail questions, you know.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm going to invest on your answer, so...
Yeah, I mean, hopefully this conversation could be a positive contribution to whatever this ends up being. It's interesting, right? Because there is a point where we can create technology which, to all intents and purposes, is as intricate and as complicated as the human brain, right? We are actually, I would say, we're quite a long way off from that, honestly. And it's worth taking that pause and thinking to ourselves about the fact that generative AI is not AI.
It is not AGI, it's perhaps not. To use the general intelligence terminology, which nobody can define anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I remember years ago when we were both, you know, back in corporate America, when... Gosh, well, it was probably around about 2014, 15, probably. It was a huge explosion of conversation around machine learning.
Sure.
And quite frankly, kudos and round of applause to everybody who was getting stuck in at that time, because those people are the people who have created the technology that we're now seeing that's proving so useful and is a really good example of how stuff takes a while to net out. That's not to say that that means everything's going to take as long. And to your point, Ian, yeah, things are accelerating. What we've been discovering about consciousness in a lot of the physics that's being performed right now, I don't know if you've been reading up on these nanotubes created by neurons in the brain that are effectively, they capture a quantum wave.
Yeah.
And there's actually a concept right now that effectively says that consciousness is a state of the universe, which for me, I've written two science fiction novels and my second was actually along these lines and a conversation for another time. But I've often found myself thinking and saying, isn't it amazing that we as humans, a part of this wonderful universe that we're in, are the universe thinking about itself?
That's a deep thought.
And the latest physics basically says it's possible that all consciousness, yours, mine, everybody who's listening, all of our loved ones, all of our enemies, all of our family throughout time, including my great-grandfather, whose pub chair is sitting over there with a laptop on it, are all the same consciousness.
Yep.
And at some point, we will create the technology that allows the artificial creation of the state that does that. For the next couple of years, I fully expect things to be very different, and I'm embracing what we have right now. But I think we do have an opportunity to still hustle.
Well, I think we do. I think that's so interesting. I mean, you know, obviously Sam Altman is a name that I'd say has become a lot more commonplace in discourse recently, even though he's accomplished a lot. But, you know, he's said a couple interesting things, right, that recently that I thought were pretty fascinating. One is one of my favorite tweets of all time. It was from a few months ago, and I'm paraphrasing. It was effectively, he was asking, like, what's the word for being nostalgic for the era you're in while you're still in the era, right? And you can read deeply into that and say, wow, like, he's looking ahead at this crazy pace of change. But he also has talked repeatedly about how, to your point, you know, general intelligence maybe is defined by consciousness is much farther away than maybe some of the more excited among us are thinking. And it is interesting because, you can go down this path where you can say AI is able to reason incredibly well, magically, you know, by the standards of a few years ago, certainly compared to the regressive machine learning models. But reasoning is not consciousness, right? And I think that's our next conversation.
And, you know, I was always a massive fan of Star Trek growing up. And in fact,
looking around for one of the books. I mean, I see Ian Banks here, which is one of my favorite authors, like the Culture series.
He is probably my favorite. There we go. You've got the Star Trek Encyclopedia from the 90s.
And oh, yep, yep, right there. The technical manual. I had this.
So Gene Roddenberry, it was a visionary in so many ways, and his aspiration and dream for humanity, which is what Star Trek is based on, right? The Star Trek world is a communist world.
Sure. It's a utopian communist world.
And that's even in the latest Star Trek, the one with Pike, which is, I love, they're even self-aware of that within the show. And I think we're going to see some really, really big changes with just how we have to deal with the fact that there's a lot of jobs that are going to go away.
Yeah.
And that we need to say, as a society, that's okay, because it's going to happen. Fun fact I read somewhere, which was the jobs that are going to survive the longest are going to be jobs like carpenters and plumbers, because
robotics ain't there.
It's just not there.
Yeah, it's just not there. That's true.
So
in many ways, that's a harder problem than which is a weird thing to think about, right? But it is. It seems to be that the moving of the fingers, the joints, the design of, you know, our bodies seems to be almost a harder problem than some aspect of our day-to-day jobs.
I mean, a couple of years ago, I replaced the thermostat in our 2009 Range Rover. And my goodness, just getting in there and like physically being able to do it, let alone some of the newer cars, you just can't get in there and do it. So
I'll refrain from saying that's what you get for buying British.
There we go. Yeah, yeah.
No, it's true of any vehicle, I'm sure, below the belt. Well, fascinating. Okay, so we're coming up on time here, but I want to pull this back, because before we were recording, you were talking about some of the kind of the frameworks and the tools that you use to bring some order to the chaos. So, you know, let's go back to storytelling in this complex, fast-changing world. Do you have a tool that you think everybody should be aware of?
Absolutely. And I love that quote that you mentioned from Sam Altman. Yeah, asking the question, is there a word for having a sense of nostalgia for a time we're actually living through? Because I think what Sam's doing there is he's demonstrating awareness of the importance of the story that he is living and also involved with making.
Yeah.
Because storytelling is only part of it. And this is something that struck me very early on as I started to go down this rabbit hole of storytelling. Is that you've got the story and you've got the telling. And, okay, great. Where does the story come from? And if we're not talking about movies and books, which we're not, we're talking about your life, your business, your passions, right? That story has to come from somewhere. And you're either intentional about that or you're not intentional.
Sure.
It's kind of like, you know, in The Matrix, the red pill, blue pill. It's like, are you going to take the blue pill and just go back to fumbling through your life and working until you bleed and hopefully making it and hopefully having enough success to do what you want and support your family, whatever it is that you're trying to do? Or will you take the red pill of storytelling and story making and be intentional with the story that you are in right now? And there is immense power in that. It is honestly a superpower that once you've taken the red pill of storytelling, you now have more control over your life. I'm not promising you ultimate control, because we're bumping into everybody else's stories all the time, but you have so much more agency.
You're being deliberate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that, actually. I think that's actually a really good takeaway. Kind of, you know, that sage advice that you can give to the 20-year-old, the 22-year-old, or to the late stage career professional that's sitting there having maybe a midlife crisis. I know a few of those right now.
Tis the season of our lives, isn't it? So I would encourage everybody, as another takeaway, a couple of things. Number one is the first framework that I came up with to wrap my head around how I was going to help others with their story is the 3D story framework. So the power of 3D story, yeah. That's what I like to call it. And it's not just a framework, it's a process, it's an approach, and it's very simple. 3D allows you to see your story from all angles, and it's desire, difficulty, denouement. Wait, what's that crazy word? We'll get to that in a second, but desire. Everybody wants something.
Yes.
What do you want?
Yeah.
What does your customer want? What does your investor want?
Yeah.
There's something there.
Discovery 101. Look for what's underneath the surface, but they want something. And it's probably very deep and emotional and true to them as a person.
And it's probably not what you think.
Yeah.
And it's probably so fundamental that it's probably one of a handful of things, which is something I've actually been thinking about and I'm working on, which is kind of the ultimate seeds of all stories. But that's a topic for another day. And then there's difficulty. Wouldn't it be nice if we all got what we wanted all the time? Well, like I said, we're bumping into other people's stories, so it's not going to happen. But there's things that stand in our way, right? My son's friend wanted crushed ice, right? And he had to press a button. Now, that wasn't very difficult. He got through that pretty quickly. But he then revealed to me a difficulty that I had been having for a while that now had the third D, which is fancy French word, denouement, which means the untangling of the knot.
Untangling of the knot.
It's not a solution. It's not your product. It's whoever's story it is, how they untangled that big old mess that they maybe didn't even understand what their desires were, right? And you are a part of helping with that. You are not the only part of that. That is vital. Everybody who's listening to understand, your audience has a desire. Maybe they're an investor. Maybe they're a customer. There's things that stand in their way. How do you help them untangle that knot? Don't be a 10-year-old Matthew when you are trying to get the kite working, and don't go get the scissors and don't cut the knot. Okay. Because the kite will fly away and you will lose it forever. Spend the time, do the due diligence. And once you look at what's happening in your life, when Sam Altman looks at the time we're living in right now, and he looks at the nostalgia that he's feeling, and he thinks about what is this knot that we're helping untangle, and also maybe even tighten a bit tighter in some places, then you start to have all you need for a story. And it's super easy. Desire, difficulty, do more. So your practice this evening at
3Ds.
3Ds at dinner tonight with whoever you're with tonight, Ian, I want you and everybody who's listening, do the same. Think about something that happened to you today. And tell a story on the spot using what did you want, what stood in your way, and how did you untangle that knot? And for you, Ian, the easy one is going to be what happened when the battery died towards the end of our recording here.
Exactly.
So that framework is available on gonarrative.com.
Okay.
Download it. Yes, we do ask for email. We feel like it's a good trade.
I think
I'm giving you enough value with it to get your email. And you will, yes, we will send you emails that will, honestly, I hate spam so much that I found a company on LinkedIn today and commented on their event that they sent me an invite to an event. The ultimate spam, the newest form of spam that you can't unsubscribe from. Somebody sends you an event invite. I hate spam, so we don't do that. And if we do, unsubscribe and send me an email and tell me that I let you down, because I promise we won't. And that you will be able to get the first play from our playbook, Storytelling for Action playbook.
I love it.
And that will lead you through. It's a simple process. And then the rabbit hole keeps going deeper, but it's all practical. It's all practical stuff that you can put into use to help you become more aware of your story, your customer's story, and to start to solve problems with it. And then obviously to tell the story.
And it all starts with desire, difficulty, Daniel Moore.
Exactly.
I love that. Well, Matthew, you teed this up a little bit, but for those folks who want to follow you, where should they find you? It sounds like you're on LinkedIn and GoNarrative.com.
Absolutely. GoNarrative.com, bunch of resources on there. LinkedIn, if you want to connect on LinkedIn, follow me by all means. If you want to connect, I want to share a message or a conversation with you. I like to be connected with the people so that if somebody says, hey, who's that Ian Bergman guy? Can you introduce me to him, please? I can do that with a sense of honesty and authenticity. So, but yes, those are the two best places.
Amazing. Well, Matthew, thank you for the conversation. thank you for the take two of this conversation and the first of our up-and-coming Alchemist X Innovators Inside Conversations in the Basement series. I love this. Thank you for hosting.
Love it. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for listening as well. Thank you.
Cheers.
So that's a wrap for today's episode of Alchemist X Innovators Inside. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you found value and insight in today's discussion, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast and never miss an episode. Don't forget to share with your friends, colleagues, or anyone who is passionate about corporate innovation or just curious about great ideas and practical insights. Until next time, I'm Ian Bergman. Thanks for tuning in.